Well, you guys did a great job, I thought, on the Monday show. The only thing...
We were a little too close. We were all clearly a little sad still. Now we got a little bit of distance.
Well, look, there's a huge bright side to this whole thing. Yes, it's the first sweep in Pacers history, but we hung with the champs, right? This is the defending champions. We weren't embarrassed. We never rolled over like I feared or even suggested on the pod that we do. You know, outside of Paul George throwing his team under the bus and making the whole world talk about him leaving for the Lakers, I thought it was an effort to be proud of. I thought, I really do. We lost the series by a combined 16 points, you know? I guess for me, though, do you feel like this, that we could have made this way more interesting? like we were competitive in this thing, and I feel like we... You know, clearly we missed some opportunities. We missed the shot at the end of the first game.
Sure.
You know, we were up 25. You know, this could have been 2-2 or even 3-1 the way that we played this, you know, these four games. I still feel like LeBron figures out how to win this series, but could we have pushed him to more superhuman heights than we already pushed him? What was 41, 15, and 13 or whatever he did?
I mean, that's just it. Like, my reading of the series, I talked about it a little bit already. You know, I was kind of okay with Paul George's comments, but I feel like this was not nearly as competitive as it looked on paper, right?
Yeah.
The Cavs absolutely have another gear. They did exactly what they had to do. And in LeBron's perfect world, he wants to build, he's trying to build this momentum, right? So he wants to get to where he needs to go, but put forth the least amount of superstar goatiness that he has to do to get there so that there's something else. There's always another gear so that they're tuned up for the finals. I think that's the way that he's built. I think it's part of the narrative that he tries to build in the postseason.
God, he's so smart.
He's super smart. He's the best coach in the league. Coach of the year.
So I'm probably a bad person, and CJ Miles is too good a person. But I wonder if there was some deep, dark part of him that took just a small amount of delight in PG missing the rim on that potential game-tying three.
Well, hey, I don't want to throw dirt on the grave, but, I mean, what's Paul George's record on go-ahead shots in the final 5 seconds of a game?
Right.
Something like 0 of 16?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that there was a part of CJ that said, I could have missed the rim.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth.
Whee!
I'm going to be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounce kiss?
Hitler.
Just prepare to... just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your Pacers audio hour and member of Almighty Baller Radio, company from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're speculating on where the franchise goes from here. I got my stat of the week, and we'll be answering an undergoogleable question. Joining me are two of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., is the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? I'm going to give a shout-out to my colleagues who joined me to go march in support of science last Saturday here in the district. Good turnout. According to some people, 40,000 people showed up to just advocate for reason-based approaches towards understanding the world around us to make the world a better place. And I don't understand how one could oppose that position. So,
well, there were other estimates that were it was 100 or 200 people by people who don't believe in math. So,
okay, that's good. Chant of the day. It was a rainy day in DC, so we slogged through it. So really good turnout considering the rain. But the chant of the day came towards the end. Somebody came up with one that said, "We're nerds. We're wet. We're really, really upset." That one caught on like wildfire. That's great.
I like it. Shout out to nerds. I like nerds. I'm a nerd.
Yeah, and my sister-in-law and her mom went down to the one in Indianapolis, too. So
nice.
Shout out to Amanda and her mother. From Eugene, Oregon, out west, it's Arnold Forrester, John Harper.
What's going on, fellas? It's Thursday. Drink up.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what are you drinking out there? I see you, Harper, with the can. What is that?
You've seen me drink this before, but you just saw me do it in a bomber. Okay. This is a no-lie brew called Born and Raised, one of my staple Northwest drinks. Very tasty to my palate, and the only good thing that comes out of Spokane.
Ooh, shots fired.
Shout out to all my friends in Spokane.
Take that, Gonzaga.
JC, you drinking anything this week?
I am. I've mentioned on the show before that there's a brewery that's just a stone's throw from me called Denizens, and I am drinking their ESB. I'm not going to remember the name right now. So, but if you're in the district, give me a holler on Twitter. We'll go to Denizens, and I'll buy you an ESB.
Might take you up on that.
I highly encourage it.
I'm on the original Coors this week. One of the retro cans. It's an Adolf Coors company, so they say.
It looked pretty tall from here, my friend.
Yeah, it is a tall boy.
Nice.
That's the extra strength for when you just got swept out of the playoffs.
Yeah. Doctor's orders. You mentioned that the Patriots did. They got swept right out of the playoffs, broom and all. Kind of a bummer, if you ask me. So, what is the plan for next season? Do the Pacers need to bolster their bench, or do we want to blow it up? More of a like boom goes the dynamite style rebuild. Jason, what do you say? Are we a few pieces away, or are we all the pieces away from a contending team?
It's a really good question. We're not all of the pieces away, because we have a guy in Paul George that's a potential super duper star. And if you have a guy like that, you have a shot to win basketball games, right? So we saw that in that last series, right? Because we have Paul George, we could hang with the defending champs and push them to the brink. Well, not the brink, but in an individual game, could make it close.
The brink of a game four times.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean.
Yes.
You know, basketball.
Basketball.
So, and I would like to see the Pacers make a concerted effort to keep Paul George, and that means surrounding him with pieces that are useful, not only on the court, but also in the on the bench, right? We've talked many a times on this show about how there was a incongruence between the philosophy of basketball that Larry Bird wanted to play and the coaching hire that he made in Nate McMillan. Second to that, I think that Nate McMillan is also not the greatest motivator, right? Like, what you want is your coach to inspire guys to run through a brick wall for him, right? We've seen in these playoffs that energy and effort can win a lot of basketball games in the NBA. And you want that consistently, and you want it especially in the playoffs. And I don't think that the evidence is scant in my mind that Nate McMillan inspires that level of confidence.
I'm with you. I do want to highlight a couple of things. And one is that, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I don't think that any of us think that we have bad citizens on our team, right? We do have really good guys here.
Totally.
But I think that part of the problem was that these pieces personality-wise, didn't fit together. And that's not because we had a bunch of knuckleheads or bad citizens. It's just sometimes the personalities just don't fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we found that this year. And so it's not blow it up because we don't like the guys, right? It's something's clearly not working, right? And I mean, I'm with you on the coaching staff thing. I didn't mean to interrupt. I think that is a conversation that needs to be had. But when you put together a group of players like we have that are so even keeled, and then you hire a not motivator who's already incongruent with, you know, the style of play that they're talking about and trying to put on the court, it's too much. There's too many things that aren't working together.
I think that that's step one to A, keeping Paul George around, and B, making this team a competitive team next year. Where do you guys put the chances that Larry Bird will actually pull the trigger? I mean, I think that, we signed Nate McMillan last summer to what I want to say was a 3 or 4 year deal. Not that contracts really mean anything in the NBA, but the Pacers are a franchise that don't like to be frivolous with their money. So firing a coach that has a guaranteed deal and essentially paying another guy, so having two head coaches, is not something that Mr. Simon is a huge fan of. Joey, what do you put the chances at that Nate McMillan gets fired?
Well, I think it's just that he gets fired, I think, is disturbingly low. You know, I think it's the right basketball move, but yeah, no, you hit it right off. It's they don't like to waste money, and you know they'll have to pay off that contract one way or another. And so if he's coaching the team, they're getting something back, and if not, they're they're gonna have to, yeah, exactly, pay two coaches. So I think it would take a intervention by Larry Bird to Simon to say, hey, you know, we've made a huge mistake, this isn't working out the way we hoped it would, and the only way out to you can pull that card and say, look, like, PG's going to leave if we don't change the coach. And it's going to happen now, like this summer, for that to make a difference. Like, I guess you could wait maybe another season, but, wouldn't risk that. And also, sure. The team is no better than it was the year before with Frank Vogel. And the change was made to improve on that team. And
sure.
Yeah.
I think we're not in a better place than we were.
I mean, I'll even go back farther than that. I mean, we've regressed over the last 5 years, right? I mean, for me, yes, I think you have to admit that you made a mistake here and let Nate go. I think that conversation should be separate from what happens from Paul George, though. I think that there was ample evidence before we hired him that he wasn't a great motivator. I mean, when they let him go from Portland, I think the quote on him was, I think McMillan lost some of the players. I think he lost ability to motivate and go out and give us 100%, right? And so when you see that from his previous destination, and look, he did a great job with our team as an assistant coach. I get that, but it hasn't been a good fit here. It's not likely to turn a corner tomorrow. He clearly doesn't have the confidence of his players. This is a failed mm-hmm. experiment. It's time to move on. I think that the chances of that happening, I tend to agree with Joey. I think that it was a really bad luck draw that he won Coach of the Month. I think that makes the task of firing more difficult. But that was really about getting Lance, not about any, you know, particular button that Nate McMillan pressed.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
So,
that was a bizarre thing.
Do you think that that's counterbalanced by the fact that the Pacers were swept out of the playoffs and in one of those games blew the largest lead in NBA playoff history?
Well, I mean, I think it should, but I also think, again, that might be mitigated if the, you know, Cavaliers end up in the finals or even winning a championship, right? I mean, I worry about how those things get perceived. I think it's probably only a 30% chance that he gets canned after a year, but to me, it should be 100%. There's no reason. He's done nothing this year to make me think that he's the right coach for this group of players, and mm-hmm. he's mm-hmm. not proven to be the kind of development coach that you're going to need if you decide to go in another direction and do blow up the team. So whether we're sticking with what we got or whether we're moving to something different, as far as I'm concerned, he's not the right fit.
Agreed. Yeah, I totally agree.
So to take it a step further, what about Larry Bird? We've regressed as a franchise over the last 5 years. Where does he stand in all this?
That's a good question. I mean, my impression of the way the franchise works is that he's untouchable, that he has a really good relationship with Mel. Is it Mel Simon or Herb Simon? I can never remember. Sorry.
Every it's, time.
Herb is still alive? I mean, whatever. The Herb's Simon alive, guy.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. They have a really good relationship, and I don't see him getting fired. I think that he also has a good relationship with the other wings of the management structure in Donnie Walsh and Kevin Pritchard, right? And I think that the three of them are all advocates for one another. And also, Donnie Walsh clearly has a good relationship with Herb Simon. So I don't see him going anywhere. Okay, separate from that, do I think he deserves to be canned?
Right. I agree. There's a 0% chance he goes.
But. Right, yeah. So it's kind of a moot point. But yeah, I don't think that he's made the moves to mesh players with styles with coaches. I think that it's been, like you said, it's been a regression over the past 5 years. This team was in the Eastern Conference Finals for two consecutive seasons and then missed the playoffs. Sure, their best player's leg was broken, but climbed back into it and are now firmly entrenched in the place that you do not want to be in the NBA, which is a low-level playoff team with sort of no direction forward. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there are people out there that do a better job at this than Larry Bird.
Right. And even worse, we've got a guy who's a better player than anyone on at least three, potentially four of the other teams that would be in front of him in the playoffs. I mean, that's a waste of talent, right? And
totally. Yes.
You know, you combine that with the fact that Paul George is right now, he's an issue, right? We just got swept out of the playoffs. It's time for everyone to start turning their minds to the offseason and what happens now. And if he doesn't have that great relationship with his superstar, and neither does Coach, and neither does Donnie, and neither does Kevin, it's hard to see what we've done to prove that he should stay here and continue his career here when we've done so little to get him where he's trying to go.
Well, especially when it's not as if there's a unclear line of communication coming from Paul George. He's been very open about the fact that these are the things that I want. I want to be involved in decisions. I want a team around me that can help me win a championship. I need help. He said this for the past like 3 years. You know, it's not as if he's not telling you the things that he needs to be good.
Sure.
So like I don't understand why it's difficult.
Part of it for me is that it shouldn't have to come to Paul George saying that to the media. Someone needs to anticipate that need from him, right? Someone needs to be sitting with him and listen and making him feel heard enough that doesn't get aired in the press. Like, you know, I get it. You know, people say he shouldn't talk about this or that in the press. I get that. But he wouldn't if someone was listening to him in the front.
Yeah, I mean,
office,
you've talked about before, yeah, that if we had an infrastructure, if he had a mentor, either from a coach or a more veteran player, that a lot of these things would be non-issues, right? He would have learned that's not how you handle business. You don't even, you know, raise the possibility that you're throwing your teammates under the bus after game two of the playoffs because mm-hmm. you've learned how to handle that situation better.
Yeah. And, you know, part of it is that now I think we've just trained him that's the only way he's going to get his voice heard. So what outcome do you expect if that's sure. the only way that he gets that positive reinforcement, right? So, you know, I was talking to Colson about this the other day, and he was like, do you even want to keep Paul George, or did we break him? Is he already broken? Because,
sure. yeah.
you know, this is what we created, right? And, you know, it's tough for me to see how he becomes a better leader under current circumstances, right? He's not going to be that because we haven't given him, you know, the mentorship and opportunity to be a better leader. He is what he is, and we made him that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's really good at basketball, though.
He's awfully good at basketball.
So I think it's worth keeping him around. So let's see.
Yes, that's the answer to the question, of course.
Of the roster. So the players that we will have under contract next year. Just I want to give you this list so you can ponder these things. So PG, Thad Young, Monte Ellis, Al Jefferson, Lance Stevenson, Lavoy Allen, Miles Turner, Kevin Serafin, Rakeem Christmas. We have a team option on Joe Young and a team option on Glenn Robinson III, which we'll definitely pick that one up, and Georgie Nang. I should say we have a team option on Lavoy Allen, which maybe we'll pick up. CJ Miles has a player option. He's currently making $4.8 million.
Pick that
up. I don't know that he opts into that. I think he could probably make more than that on the open market. So I guess the question is, what do you do with Jeff Teague? Do you believe in Jeff Teague as the future of your franchise at point guard? And is a full season of Lance Stevenson enough to fill that hole at the two guard position, which was glaring the entire season?
Is Monte under? I don't remember. Did you say Monte was under contract or no?
Oh yeah, we're paying Monte Ellis $11 million next year, 11.2, and he has a player option for 11.7.
But he's got that weird thing that Rodney had, so he'll get cut.
Oh, that's right.
Year.
So we can waive him before next season.
And he won't be able to exercise the player option. So
right.
At some point, Monte leaves next year. It's
yeah, but his cap number still counts against us next year, no matter what.
For next season, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2017-18, he's guaranteed, and it definitely counts on next year's cap.
I'm with you.
Okay. Because he's got to go. He was bad in the playoffs. He was bad in the season. He certainly had his moments. I like Monte. Like, he seems like a good guy, but he just can't start. And coming off the bench, he had his times, but boy.
But so you're looking at a potential starting lineup of, let's say, point guard X, maybe it's Jeff Teague, Stevenson, George, Thad Young, if we're still running with that experiment, and Miles Turner, which is basically the same lineup that we had this year. Well, instead of Lance Stevenson. But that was pretty effective, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing that Lance Stevenson gives you is he gives you defense at that two-guard position and more playmaking and an actual heartbeat. So, you know, you wonder if this team had a heartbeat all year if they would be a 50-win ball club.
Sure. Well, that's definitely all to the positive. So at the end of the day, we have right around $30 million next year to spend in the offseason, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And we're going to have to sign a point guard unless you want to roll with Aaron Brooks.
Nope, he's not even under contract. So.
Well, but you could get him for relatively cheap.
Sure.
You get him back. Yeah.
Sure.
Colson and I were talking the other day, and it's difficult for us to get free agents, right? What do you guys think about potentially overpaying Andre Iguodala to come play for us? So you have to pay AI $15 million a year. And you can still sign Jeff Teague.
I like the fact that he's a veteran leader. I think that that's worth paying for at some level. I don't know how much he's contributing just next year. Although he's still putting in really good minutes this year. I like something akin to that move. I like getting a veteran guy that can be a steadying voice in the locker room and be a mentor to Paul George. It definitely would help if we got somebody that had a championship ring, right? That carries a lot of weight. And that's clearly something Paul George has said that he wants to do. So, you know, having somebody there that can be like, look, these are the things you need to do to get this, you know, and convey that personally is obviously helpful.
Sure. We don't know if Gordon Hayward's going to be out there yet because the All-NBA team hasn't come out yet. That also affects Paul George, obviously. Most of the guys that are out there, I mean, the big name that's out there, as near as I can tell, I mean, unless you've got a bunch of love for Jrue Holiday or the Rooster, is Paul Millsap.
Okay.
He was a guy who was on the trade block 3 months ago, and got pulled off at the last minute. So he's not an institution in Atlanta. Do you think we have any shot at Paul Millsap?
I think if we sign Paul Millsap, we take a serious step down at point guard. So that's the math you got to do. But
do you think
potentially,
that
yes. I think the fact that we have Paul George makes us able to at least bring any free agent to the table, right? Outside of the the Kevin Durant's of the world or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, my problem at this point is I'm not sure that we can keep Paul George without signing an all-star.
Sure.
So by the place that I got to, what basically Colson ended up talking me into, I think more by accident than anything, is that our fate really hangs on whether or not we can sign Paul Millsap. Right? And wow. I'm not sure we can sign Paul Millsap without Paul George committing to the future of this team.
Sure. Yeah, we're in a real catch-22 situation here, which is tough. But Paul Millsap solves a lot of problems on this team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Thad Young is a poor man's Paul Millsap.
And Thad Young off our bench would be amazing, right?
Totally. I like that. But then what do you do with the point guard position? Do you just get an Aaron Brooks equivalent or something like that? I don't think we'll be able to afford Patty Mills.
So Colson thinks that you can get Patty Mills for 10 mil.
Colson's smoking crack rocks.
That's what I thought too, but what do I know? I think that he goes for maybe we can talk Jeff Teague down because he did not have a good... There are parts of his game that lack that I think that teams are aware of.
Do you think you could get Jeff Teague for 15 mil?
I think that 15 is about the high end of the spectrum for me right now. I mean, I don't see paying him $20 million. I don't see it.
And I mean, I want to keep a hometown kid around,
but that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, but the salary cap is ridiculous right now. So it'll be interesting. I haven't really delved into the offseason free agent market yet at all. But Joey, what do you think? What would you do? Would you rather have a potential all-star at point guard? We'll say that. Jeff Teague has been an all-star before. Or Paul Millsap, potential all-star at the power forward position. An all-star. He is an all-star.
Yeah. I guess if you go replacement level point guard with Paul Millsap, Miles Turner, who should be hopefully better next year, Paul George, Lance Stephenson, and Paul Millsap. I mean, I think that's pretty nasty. I think that's a solid team you tried out. Plus, if you got that young kind off the bench, and plus, don't forget if you have Paul George, pretty good ball handler. Lance Stephenson, is currently or was the back. He's a ball handler too. He can run an offense. So I don't think that if you're able to get Millsap, I think that's maybe the way to go. I don't know what the marketing department thinks with their hometown hero. I like that move.
Yeah, we're definitely not going to sell this today, but I think you hit the nail on the head, or maybe Colson hit the nail on the head, which is we need an all-star to pair with Paul George. Otherwise, if we are unable to do that, I think that trading him is the best move for the franchise in the long run.
What about this? So Taj Gibson will be out there. Can we pay him enough money and re-sign Jeff Teague and get another piece? Is that enough? Because Taj Gibson solves some problems too, right?
He does help with our rebounding issues, for sure.
And our toughness issues.
Totally. Maybe he fits better with the way that Nate McMillan wants to play. And we, instead of trying to be a not very good running team, we become a half-court possession-oriented team. To the chagrin of Larry Bird.
That's part of the problem is we don't even know what we want to do. We just played a whole season of basketball and we don't know where our identity is. So that's special.
Yeah, I think one thing for me is it depends on who the coach is. If you're going to run a gun.
Sure. That's the first down.
Like we have been Nate McMillan style. Or have not been Nate McMillan style, I guess. It just depends. One thing I just I thought Lance fit in better at the system that Larry wanted to run. You know, I thought a couple times during the late in the season and the playoffs, like you had Lance basically leading the charge with the basketball, not on a fast break, but wanting his team to be up there with him pressing. They were just behind because that's not how this team mm-hmm. has played.
So we were talking about Nate's uninspired courtside interview after the third in the third quarter in game four. Mm-hmm. And and one of the things he was talking about was pressing the pace and getting looks against an unsaid defense. It was hilarious because we came out in the fourth quarter and immediately had like two chances to press the tempo and just didn't do it. Like, oh, that message really came through, Nate. Thanks for that.
Yeah,
but then eventually
he forgot to tell them. He felt like he said it in the interview, so why should he say it again?
He told the reporter. No need to tell the players. But then, of course, eventually Lance got them playing a little bit more up and down, and of course we had success with it. I mean, it was the right strategy, but...
Well, it's going to be an entertaining offseason, nonetheless.
It'll be exciting. It will be that.
Things will happen, for sure. Things are going to happen.
Well, Pacer Nation, unfortunately, our bartender was unable to be with us on Sunday when we recorded. But if we're going to hit panic buttons, it's only right to do it with the bartender. So I'm sitting down now to get his thoughts on, well, what I can only assume is the end of the universe as we know it. Mr. Coulson, so happy to get a chance. We missed the hell out of you on Sunday.
Well, I appreciate it. You're burying the lead, though. I forced you to do this. I was so sad to miss Sunday's show.
We were equally sad to not have you. Yeah. Seriously, when the panic buttons need to be hit, I call Coulson.
Well, I brought them all tonight, so no worries.
All right.
I'd like to do a quick shout out before we get going because I miss shout outs. Shout out to Christine Kokkinen. She passed away last week at the age of 86. But her obituary is fantastic. And in it, it says that she had a devotion to the Sacramento Kings that would rival any love story. And goes on further to say, whether you knew her or not, the world's most interesting woman is going to be missed. And the world a little duller. Christine requested that six players from the Sacramento Kings be her pallbearers so that they could let her down one last time. Shout out.
Shots fired from beyond the grave.
I love it so much.
That is amazing.
So, and you know, it spoke to me this week as my Pacers let me down once again.
That is amazing. Shout out.
So let's see where to start. I've so many places to start. Look, PG is an inconsistent leader. I will say that. And I'll forgive him for that, honestly. Like, I mean, I'm willing to let him grow and become that. You know, he even talked about it at the end of the series about how the loss of George Hill and Jan Mahimny made him the only, you know, voice in the locker room. And he really struggled with that. And he tried to figure out the right buttons to push, different buttons at different times. And he didn't always do it right. And that's, I appreciate the honesty from him because we've, you know, talked all season about his inconsistency as a leader. And,
sure.
You know, so I appreciate that he's struggling with that. And I would love for him to be here forever and getting better at that, over time.
I'm with you. And, you know, I'm going to put a pin under that because I don't want to get too far in the weeds on that, but we've had conversations about what Paul, you know, the growth of Paul George as a leadership requires from our organization. That is something that we're going to talk about a lot in the offseason. We'll certainly get to it. You know, I just don't think we're doing enough to help him along. We'll leave that there for now because sure. We want to move on to what this means for our franchise.
Okay, so I was actually had an opportunity to listen to you guys talk.
Ramble.
Yeah, yep. And actually we'll be in the same show. So I want to kind of give a little – I'm the contract nerdy guy. Our offseason is going to be pretty – awful because our contracts are kind of a mess, right? So next season, the salary cap is $102 million. and the tax is 121. So we're never going to go over the luxury tax the way the Simons aren't going to spend the money for that. So we've got to
be Simon.
The Simon. Is it Herb?
Yes.
Okay. So we currently, as of right now, we'll have $70 million on the books for next season in contracts. If we pick up LaVoy Allen's team option, which is $4 million, which we probably should because nobody gets paid $4 million in the new CBA, right? I mean, everybody gets paid $8 million, right? So so we'll be at 74. That leaves us with $28 million because CJ Miles will opt out of his contract, right? There's no reason why he's going to – I mean, he right now could make between $8 and $16 million being a 3-and-D guy on any team in the league, right? And he's currently getting paid $4.5 million. So
you mean the three guy?
Be nice. He's a good, he's rangy. So both Teague and Aaron Brooks are free agents, which basically leaves us without a point guard unless you call Joe Young that or are willing to start Lance there.
Nope, need to sign a point guard.
So $28 million to play with, right? Hey, no sweat. Except you've got to remember we have cap holds. So basically all of our free agents hold our money up unless we renounce them. If we decide we want to re-sign Jeff Teague, his contract, his cap hold is 130% of his current salary. So he's currently getting paid $8 million. It'll be a little over 10. That's a cap hold for him. Now, he's going to earn way more than that, but that's a cap hold, right?
Well, I mean, we're either going to sign him or not sign him, right?
Well. So what I'm saying is the reason I mention this is because we're in a situation where we can't take that $28 million and go sign Paul Millsap with that money and then re-sign our guys going over the luxury, over the cap, right?
So if we hypothetically were to sign Millsap and go over the cap based on that cap hold – and then get Teague signed at a number that made us under the cap, we wouldn't have to pay a luxury on that.
No, but right? but you can't sign. So basically, since Teague's $10 million eat into our 28, right? So that there's a cap hold on that. Unless we renounce him, and if we renounce him, we can't re-sign him. So if we want to re-sign Teague, but we want to go out and get Millsap, we're only left with $18 million to play with, right? And if the same is true if you want to hold on to CJ Miles. There's $5 million cap hold on that. So now you've got, you know, now you've only got $13 million to sign a free agent. The only way that we can re-sign, that we can sign Paul Millsap is by renouncing Teague and CJ Miles and Aaron Brooks and having the $28 million to play with. So we could then sign him for whatever, 22, 25, 28, whatever he costs. But then we don't have a point guard. We can't go back and get Jeff Teague.
You've convinced me that our future depends on Paul Millsap.
Right, right. Which may be right. It's a terrible place to put us. But my right. idea is that we need a second superstar. It doesn't have to be Millsap, but we need another all-star paired with Paul George to keep him happy. And to do that...
One would think.
And to do that, we basically have to renounce the rights to re-sign Teague and CJ Miles to have the kind of cap to pay for that player, and then you're left without a starting point guard.
Well, so you are going to have to explain this part to me, because if we were to sign Millsap first and then negotiate with Teague, at the end of the day, we'd still be over the cap just because Teague needed that contract. But we could sign Millsap.
Not because of the cap hold, right? So we could sign Millsap for $18 million if we could do that, because there's a cap hold on what we have to...
But we're allowed, there's a soft cap in the NBA.
Correct, correct. But
there is no hard cap.
Right. So the issue is you can only sign free agents under the amount that you're under the cap, right? So we're currently $28 million under the cap.
Gotcha.
Right? However, your players on your team that become free agents.
So can I get Paul Millsap by renouncing just one or the other?
If Teague has the higher cap hold, right? So if you yes. renounce CJ and Aaron Brooks, that frees you up $7 million. You've still got the $10 million cap hold from Teague. So now you only
when does the cap hold come up?
What's that? It never does. It comes up if somebody else signs that player or you renounce them.
Not until they sign him.
Yeah.
Not until someone else actually
signs him. And if I say I'm renouncing them, I can't re-sign them. So this $28 million doesn't really exist, unfortunately. That's the problem.
So we're hosed is what you're telling me.
This is my concern. I think we really are hosed. And let's say we want to bring the band back together. Let's just say that, right? Let's say CJ Miles and Jeff Teague, Aaron Brooks, they're all coming back. Let's say we give CJ Miles $14 million and we give Jeff Teague $18 million or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say those are reasonable numbers for the market. I think those are probably discounts, right? We're already at that point over the cap and unable to sign free agents. Now,
well, but we can get, you know,
there's an exception.
Mid-cap.
Yeah, there's an $8 million mid-level exception that we could use at that point. But who are you going to get at $8 million in this current market? So there's not a real, if we can't bring the band back together and put in another piece.
Okay, so I guess the question to you, Colson, is where you at on Jeff Teague, brah?
That's the question, isn't it?
Where are you at?
Yeah. I love Jeff Teague. I thought he was our second
hometown
best.
Hometown hero. Yeah,
and I thought he was our second best player. And I like his game. I think he can pick apart a defense. He can get into the lane. He can shoot. He can do the things you want. He's clearly not the kind of personality that this team needs because our personalities didn't work this season, if that makes sense. I'm not saying that's Jeff Teague's fault. I'm saying he's an introvert, and he's not.
And we had a full house.
Full house of those. I think you can bring him back because he's a talent. He's what, 30? Like, he's right in the middle of his prime. I think you can bring him back. I think the market will be a little depressed for point guards because there's so many good point guards, and everybody kind of already has a point guard. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think we could maybe not have to pay him $25 million a year. Like, it's potentially...
Oh, he's not a max player. That's...
Yeah, but, I mean, there's a chance that you can bring him back at reasonable money in this new CBA. And I would like to do that, but the only way you do that is if... I mean, you guys talked earlier about the odds that Larry Bird's not going anywhere. The odds are really that Nate's not going anywhere. I think you gave it a 30% chance. And that might be high. I mean, like, I think Nate should go. Like, look, he's a nice guy. He's a decent coach. But he's not the right coach for this team, right? I mean, after the playoff series, he said, I think we're better than a 500 team. Really, Nate? We all think that, buddy. Like, whose fault is that? Like, this
yeah,
is,
right? You know, killing me. Who are you telling?
But it's you know, we talked about, you guys talked about whether the, you know, Herb Simon's willing to pay for essentially having two coaches. Like, there's a good chance he's coming back. And if that's the case, you're now pinning all your hopes on the fact that Lance changed the chemistry enough.
Look, first of all, I mean, two things with that. One, it's unfortunate that it took so long for the Lance experiment to happen, right? Because I think that if we had a bigger sample set with him on our team, plus Jeff Teague, Paul George, and Thaddeus Young, and all the other introverts that we have, we'd have a better idea of how that actually makes the locker room work.
Right.
As it is, I feel like the sample set is so small that we're guessing, right?
Right.
If we'd have got him halfway through the season and we could say, well, Lance is the solution to this problem, and
right,
you know, we can have Jeff Teague and make this work, that would be one thing. But I don't think we have that much data.
We don't.
Right?
We have.
I want to make it clear. It's not an acceptable outcome for Nate to come back.
I'm with you. I mean, that
that's
is
not an acceptable outcome as a Pacers.
I mean, there are basically two ways or three ways where we potentially can keep Paul George. One of those is that the All-NBA teams come out next month. They come out in May.
Well, that's a prerequisite.
If he doesn't...
No matter what.
Well...
That's a prerequisite. There's no scenario where we can't pay him more money and he stays.
I think if we can pay him that much more money, I think he will stay. But...
I will say maybe to that, but it's you're not a guarantee.
Okay. The other thing is we have to win over 50 games and be competitive next year. So to do that, I think we need a different coach and or another superstar to put next to him. If you're not going to get a superstar to put next to him, because it looks like financially we can't do that. I mean, we could do that, but then we've got Joe Young starting at point. You know, I mean, like, we could, if you want to roll that out. That means so the change has to come from coaching, right? It has to.
If we can't get ourselves into a position this offseason by the draft that we're comfortable with Paul George being better than 50-50 staying, we're going to have to make some really tough decisions really fast. So I agree with you. All-NBA team is a must to have a chance of keeping him. I further agree that Nate is not the right guy for this organization right now. But my thing for keeping him was basically we need to get a superstar. Because if we can't be confident that we're keeping him through next year, then he won't help us get a superstar. We won't have a superstar. And the 50 win season next year and being competitive into the playoffs is a crapshoot. And you can't do the crapshoot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? I think that's the wrong thing. So I think you got to control what you can control, which right now, first and foremost, is the coaching thing. So we've got to get him really, really excited about his coach. Mm-hmm. So who is out there that could make him really excited, that's going to really light this organization on fire?
Mark Jackson is the coach, right? I mean, he's the coach.
Is he going to work with Larry Bird?
Well, look, I don't – honestly, I don't care. this is my resume I'm going to put out for Mark Jackson, okay? He was in Reggie Miller's ear all those years saying – You can beat New York. You're better. You're going to hit those shots. He gave him crazy confidence. In Golden State, he rebuilt Steph Curry's career. He made him crazy confident.
He built that
player.
Whole team. Not just him. Yeah, Clay Thompson. That whole team. He built that team.
He did build that team. He got them all confident and believing they were world beaters. And you know what? Now they shoot from 40 and they have a ton of fun.
Yeah.
You know?
The only thing is you got to believe in God, but guess what? It's Indiana. So I think that... You know, at least the fan base will buy in. I don't know if PG will.
But. I just feel like if he comes in and I think he would make Jeff Teague tougher. If you want to bring Jeff Teague back, let's bring in Mark Jackson. You know, I think.
Oh, are you kidding me?
How great would
he's
that
one
be?
Of the greatest point guards of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to make Jeff Teague better in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Miles Turner, I feel like his main issue right now is confidence. You think Mark Jackson's not going to have a problem giving him confident? No.
And that guy's already a talented passer.
Yeah.
Give Mark Jackson a little time showing him how to see the court.
You think Mark Jackson has any problem telling PG to shut up when he's saying the wrong thing?
No. He's got no problem telling anybody to shut it, right? Like, he knows his space. But the thing about Mark Jackson that people respect is that he's willing to say, look, here's what I know. And... you can disagree with me on any of the stuff that you want, and I will hear you out. But within this particular box, here's the stuff that I know. At the end of the day, the real thing is, if you're interested in keeping Paul George, you need to sit him down and talk about this.
Right.
And then that's the real answer to the question is, what does Paul George want? Who's the coach that's going to light his world on fire?
Sure. If there's a guy, if there's a name out there that he wants, let's bring him in. Right.
Monta Ellis has the same player option that Rodney Stuckey had. So we know that Monta Ellis is gone at the end of next year.
Correct.
Before the playoffs.
Correct.
So that we can get rid of his cap hold.
Right.
To avoid just the situation that we're in this year. In the meantime, we're paying him, I think, $11 million to be on our team this year.
Mm-hmm.
Can we even play him at this point? What are our options here?
Well, so he can't start. I mean, he could be a part of a bench unit.
Well, it depends on who our coach is.
Well, no, that's the thing. Nate is obsessed with starting this guy all season long. We spent multiple episodes diving into the analytics and proving that Monta Ellis was terrible in the starting unit. And Nate would occasionally make it so that CJ Miles or GR3 started, but then kept coming back to Monta. And it's inexplicable. I don't understand.
No, it's explicable. Nate is not a great coach.
So, I mean, okay, ideally, I mean, I'm willing to give up an asset to to get rid of Monte's contract in the offseason.
Really? Even just for a year?
Yes, because here's for me, there are teams right now, like Brooklyn, Denver, Phoenix, Philly, that have cap space that could just absorb his contract. So what I'm saying is I would trade them our draft pick this year so they would take him away. And the reason I would do that is, one, he's not been great for us. And two, that frees up $11 million. And so all of those cap issues I was telling you about start to go away. And now you've got real money to play with in the offseason.
Gotcha, gotcha. So as long as we do that in this offseason, that works. Yes. Like, we could cut him, you know, if nothing happens, next season we could cut him. And if somebody picks him up, then that comes off our cap for how much they're paying him and blah, blah, blah. But if we somehow traded him in a second round pick for... You know,
it might be a first round. I mean, whatever it takes, honestly, because
here's my thing. I'm not willing to
keep that. You want to keep that pick 16 or whatever it's going to be?
I want to keep Paul George is what I want to pick. I just think the idea.
I'm trying to do that. So what I'm doing is I'm coughing up Monte Ellis. I've freed up $11 million of cap space to now go out and sign Paul Millsap and still bring back.
Okay. So if you're telling me that I can trade away Monte Ellis, keep Jeff Teague, or at the very least a Reggie Jackson or a Drew Holiday, and sign an all-star by getting rid of my first-round pick?
Yes, so I'm telling you. I don't know that anybody would do that, but if
hypothetically, I mean, look, we're in hypothetical land here. I'm with you. If I could get Paul Millsap on my team, Paul George to commit under those circumstances and help me recruit, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant
idea. Because the draft pick doesn't matter if you're keeping...
That's brilliant.
Well, thank you. I do what I can. I've solved everything. You're welcome, Larry.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you have.
No, I mean the issue becomes, you can do all of this. You figure out some team to jump Monte Ellis on. You save your $11 million. You're able to sign an all-star and also bring back a Teague and maybe even a CJ Miles. You're loaded at that point, right? And you also have to change your coach so that team
can... Well, I mean, that's a prerequisite.
Right. So let's say
changing coaches, then let's trade Paul George.
Right. Let's say all that happens. And that's a lot of things that have to happen in the offseason to keep him around.
A lot of moving parts. But you know what? Great organizations make the adjustments that need to be made. That's just the way that it works. And if you're not a great organization, then you can't keep up with the curve. And right now, changes need to be made. So we're going to find out a lot, not just about Paul George or Jeff Teague or who's signing and who's not in our team. We're going to find a lot about our organization this offseason. We're going to find out a lot. To your point about, you know, what you can get back, I just saw the Portland Trail Blazers trade Mason Plumlee and get back Nurkic, a guy who they're 16-4 with.
Yeah.
And get a first round draft pick out of the deal. And not a bad one at that.
Yeah.
Like, there are trades out there. There are teams who have GMs who are killing it.
So let's say you've got essentially in this scenario of this offseason, and we have not traded anybody. This is just reality. We have about $8 to $10 million to work with. You can get an average player for that. Or you get rid of everybody, you say, screw you, Teague, screw you, CJ Miles, and you're gonna bring in one superstar, you're going to bring in two or three average players, okay? Does any of that move the needle for Paul George? I'm not sure it does. At this point, I don't know if Patty Mills and Taj Gibson make us better than Jeff Teague and CJ Miles. I don't know that it does. And so I'm really starting to get to the point where I think if Paul George doesn't make the third All-NBA team, I think we trade him. I don't want to say that. I love Paul George. I want him on my team. He's an elite talent. But we are in a terrible situation. We're in a terrible cap situation. We're in a terrible situation where we don't really control our own destiny. Because Paul George could just walk away no matter what we try to do. And we can't really even trade. I mean, LA's not going to give anything for him because they think he's going there anyway. So we're not even at a good place for trading him. If I can get a number one pick, you know, and in this draft, like three of the top five prospects are point guards. If I say, all right, I can trade him for a number one pick and a Jaylen Brown from Boston. So I replace my small forward and I get a number one draft pick point guard. I let Teague walk. I got a bunch of cap space because I just traded Paul George. It might be worth doing. I mean, you're basically, you know, resetting the franchise with a, you know, a stud prospect point guard, a nice small forward piece, and Miles Turner. I mean, we'll probably win 20 games next year, but I think if you don't do that and Paul George walks away, this franchise is screwed for 5 years at least. And I don't want to be at that place, but that's where I'm at. When we got swept out of the playoffs, this is where we were at.
Right. All right. So to wrap it up then, what is the optimal scenario for us this offseason? Optimal. What's the best thing that could happen?
We sign Mark Jackson or Becky Hammon as our coach.
Okay.
We trade Monte Ellis for the cap space.
Okay.
And we sign Paul Millsap, re-sign CJ Miles and Teague. If we do that, I feel like Paul, we're winning 50 games and Paul George wants to be on our team. Like, that's best case scenario, but that's a lot of moving parts.
I mean, at least we have something that we can work towards. And that makes a difference. Well, Colson,
I appreciate you letting me go deep on the monies. I know that got a little in the weeds there, but you know, I get nerdy on that stuff. I enjoy it. Just need my franchise to do better.
All right. Well, in that case, we'll throw it to a stat of the week and take it from there.
Next up, got my stat of the week.
Joey, stat of the week.
This week, wanted to bring up the fact the Pacers had never been swept out of the playoffs.
Piling on, huh, Joey?
Yeah, no. That was until the season. Of course, the Cavaliers knocked the Pacers out in four games. But I thought that was really impressive, you know, all the years that the Pacers have been to the playoffs. You know, sometimes with some, you know, softer teams back in the earlier days of the franchise, you know, Reggie's early years, they managed always to take one. But they changed that this year. Kind of a bummer.
It's a total bummer. It's not kind of a bummer. It's a total bummer. So you can, when you're Larry Bird and you're making your list of pros and cons of Nate McMillan, you can put that in the con side.
Sure. Yeah. It's safe to put that on that side, yes.
All right. I think it's time for another segment of the Undergoogleables.
Oh, are we doing Undergoogleables?
That was the plan.
Super excited.
You told us we had to, so.
you said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
Jason, what do you got for us this week?
Well, we got a special Undergoogles for new fans of the show. We're now on Dash Radio, so shout out to Dash Radio. What we do is we do a segment where listeners tweet in a question that they may have Googled. You know, you're at a bar and you are having a bar conversation. You come up with a phrase or a whatever, what does this mean kind of thing. You would have Googled it. Instead of Googling it, what we want you to do is send it into us, and then we will act like Google. We'll just use our collective brain power, because we're all smart guys, to deduce what the answer is. And then what we do is we double check our clearly accurate deduction with Google and tell you the actual answer. So this week our submission comes in from a person near and dear to my heart, my sister, Aaron Triplett. And quick sidebar shout out to, she has a podcast called Falling in Love with Trippin' Brick. So if you're a fan of romantic comedies, subscribe to that. But her question, I'm guessing related to romantic comedies, is where does the phrase having a crush originate from? You guys have any thoughts on this? Her guess is falconry, which is where most phrases come from.
That's good.
Yeah, I was thinking it was probably Middle Ages. You know, you have a crush on a guy or a gal, and you're royalty, and it's not reciprocated, so you crush them with a big rock. Okay. I think that much is clear.
But we're more civil these days, so the crushee survives. Generally.
Well, generally. Most of the time.
I was thinking like, all of us, we like a beer or two here and there. And, you finish it up and you just crush the beer can and throw it away. But we love our beer, so we crush them.
I think that's a different meaning with crush.
Okay. I was thinking that so one has a crush on someone else, but often those are unrequited. So you really like someone, but they don't like you back, so you are crushed.
It's crushing.
Internally. It's a crushing blow to you.
Since it's not falconry, it's probably Shakespeare.
It's definitely Shakespeare, for sure. Are there any other ways in which this could have originated? Like, we think it's Shakespeare. Is there a chance that it originated later than that? Like, was this like a flapper term or something like that in the 20s? It seems like a... You had a crush on the bee's knees.
It could easily be like a 50s thing.
Okay.
You think this has to do with maybe the era of exposed ankles?
Yeah.
Right. Mm. So you're thinking, Jason, that it might be the crush, like a crush is basically an unrequited feeling and you feel bad afterwards.
Right.
You're crushed. Okay. I like that.
Did we like that? And we think it's Shakespeare. We think it's...
it's either Shakespeare or the 1950s, yeah.
Or potentially like a David Bowie song. I'm not sure.
Okay, according to English Stack Exchange, the romantic sense of crush was first recorded in the 1884 Journal of Isabella Maud Rittenhouse. Crush might have been a variation on mash, since by 1870, mashed was a popular way of saying flirtatious or head over heels in love, and to crush something was to mash it.
Interesting. According to phrases.org.uk, the euphemism originated in the United States as a slang term about 1914. So I was not far off with my flapper's guess. It was institutionalized by the popular song of the 20s written by the Gershwins, George and Ira, that is, in case you were confused, which crooned, "I've got a crush on you, sweetie pie." So what do we think? Which of those do we believe? Those are widely varying accounts of the origin of the phrase.
I don't know. It seems like maybe that was one of those terms that probably ran around in slang for a long time before it was really ever codified anywhere usefully. So,
I probably like the one that you brought up earlier, the article. A little bit later in that one, they described mash as regarded as a spoon-fed diet. It's like something you'd feed somebody. But they also called it, drew a link to the word spoony. And if you were spoony on someone, since the 1820s, meant to be foolishly or sentimentally amorous. But I like that. I like that, you might be able to be spoony on somebody.
Yeah, for sure. We're bringing it back.
Oh, yeah. You want to get spoony with me, baby?
So here's a third one. So according to Etym Online, there was a term, an older usage of crush, which is now obsolete, for a social gathering such as a dance or reception. I fell in with her at Lady Grey's crush from a letter in 1832. Maybe it's all those things.
That was kind of an undergoogleable.
Yeah, it kind of was.
It still baffles me that there's so many phrases that all of us use that we have no idea what the origins are And they don't make sense when you speak about them literally.
Well, whatever. Like 90% of the crap I use in a day, I would have no ability to tell you how it works or how to build one. So
it's fair enough.
The fact that my language is also like that is not that surprising to me. Somebody asked me to build a laptop tomorrow, I'd just lie down on the floor in a fetal position.
Well, we've all been there this playoff season.
Save that for Bumble. Sure.
Well, I would like to thank you, the listener, for hanging out with us, being here. We love doing this show, and glad to have you here with us along for the ride. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do it on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Website is TheUndebeatables.com. We've got a contact form there. You can send us all a message. You can send us an email, shoutout@TheUndebeatables.com. You can listen to this show as a podcast. If you aren't listening to that way right now, you can subscribe to us in iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcast. If you're in iTunes, you can give us a review. That really helps new listeners find our show. We got some t-shirts for sale too. You can catch them on the website.
And for a once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard, now in the Hall of Fame. Turn out the lights. The party's over. That was weird. I did a real... now I see how Coulson does it. You just start and you just let it go where it goes.
Let it take on a life of its own, man.
Yeah. It's an ancient craft. You can't control it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of fun.